Greetings, Earthlings, and welcome to Are UFO Real? My name's Tom, and with me, as always, is Grant.
Present.
Ausente. Oh, man, how are you doing today, buddy?
Pretty good. Yeah, I want to apologize to all the listeners here. Obviously, we took last week off again. We've been pretty swamped here, basically dealing with on-world stuff.
Look, no complaints here. I'm happy to have a job during these times, but you know, I've been very busy with work, and Grant has too. We were just discussing that before the podcast, so we're both rather low energy right now. But at the same time, I've discovered something that I really think all you listeners will enjoy, especially those of you who are interested in alien and UFO phenomena. And I tend to believe that's all of you, because why would you listen to our podcast if you weren't interested in alien / UFO / UAP phenomena? It's a neat little documentary that just showed up on Netflix that I watched randomly, and I found it to be mind-blowingly interesting. And I hope you guys will find it as interesting as I did. We're recording this through Skype right now, as always. And are you seeing that, Grant? There's like a distortion type thing. There's a radio antenna on your head. It's kind of making like a beep. Noise. It's UFO news.
That's right. So this story, it was sent to us by a listener and a frequent contributor to the show. We have a pretty good rapport going, and I always enjoy his updates. He sent me a couple other stuff here too that we're gonna have to get into in some future episodes. I want a little more time to look at them here, get some background. But this is a pretty big development here. So the listener sent me an article from Politico, and then I saw it actually in The Guardian as a headline. I think it was the next day. And I'm having trouble pulling it up on my computer here, but here I go. So this is from the Politico article. I think it was a little bit better than the Guardian one here, a little more details. But the headline here is Pentagon establishes new task force to investigate UFOs. And this is written by Brian Bender and released on August 14th, 2020.
Awesome. By the way, you guys, we are recording this on Monday, August 24th, 2020. Just for your frame of reference, if you guys are listening to this sometime in the future.
Right. And the little text under the headline here says, the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force elevates research in recent years by the Navy into unexplained encounters with high-performance craft. And here's directly from the article. Quote, the Pentagon, under growing pressure from Congress, said Friday it had established a new high-level body to investigate reports of, quote-unquote, unidentified aerial phenomena following multiple incidents in recent years of UFOs reportedly intruding into military airspace. Commentary here. Obviously, we've been following this story for quite a long time, and all of our listeners should be pretty up to date on what's been going on here.
Indeed.
Back to the article. The Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force was created by Deputy Defense Secretary David Norquist on August 4th, elevating an effort that since 2018 has been under the purview of the Office of Naval Intelligence, officials said. Quote, the Department of Defense established the UAPTF to improve its understanding of and gain insight into the nature and origins of UAPs, Pentagon spokesperson Susan Goh said in a statement. The mission of the task force is to detect, analyze, and catalog UAPs that could potentially pose a threat to U.S. national security. End quote. The new high-level attention was heralded by Lou Elizondo, who was involved in the previous Pentagon UFO research program known as the Advanced Aerospace Threat Intelligence Program, or ATIP, that was wound down in 2012. And it kind of goes into the background on ATIP and What was the other one? And Two of the Stars Academy and the release of the Flim Flam videos or the Tic Tacs or whatever you call them.
Weird. Flim Flam.
that's a little humor there.
No, but that was not humorous, Grant. That was not funny. I did not laugh at all.
But it goes into that a little bit, which, again, we've talked about quite a bit. But I think this is interesting because this is kind of where Tom DeLonge has said that To the Stars Academy. I always get To the Stars Academy and A-Tip mixed up. But kind of what they were looking for is, and it seems like the military is, in fact, being more open about these strange things. But then Senator Marco Rubio has some quotes on here, too. So, quote, "We have things flying over our military bases and places where we are conducting military exercises, and we don't know what it is, and it isn't ours. So that's a legitimate question to ask," Senator Marco Rubio, acting chair of the intelligence panel, told WFOR-TV in Miami last month. "Frankly, if it's something from outside this planet, that might actually be better than the fact that we've seen some sort of technological leap on behalf of the Chinese or the Russians or some other adversary," he said. Rubio's office did not immediately respond to a request for comment. So, yeah, basically they're not saying it's aliens.
Damn good, damn good Marco Rubio impression, by the way. I don't know if you guys don't know, but that was not actually Marco Rubio speaking. That was Grant doing a Marco Rubio impression. So,
oh yeah, it wasn't a recording or anything. I follow politics loosely, you know, but I think I have a pretty good feel for Senator Rubio there.
And you know what, man? I agree that this is something that needs to be more transparent with the American public, and it needs to be taken more seriously. I know there's a lot, like, UFOs tend to get lumped in with blatant baloney conspiracy theory stuff a lot. And I think as far as things that could be deemed quote unquote conspiracy theories, unidentified aerial phenomena is up there as the most plausible of things that should be taken seriously. And I think that government transparency in investigating UAP phenomena or UAP is imperative. So I think that's a step in the right direction here.
Yeah, and I mean, he brings up a good point. The real reason they're doing it is to make sure that how do they put it? An adversary doesn't have this technology or hasn't,
sure,
you know, been leaps ahead of us.
Sure, sure.
But it's interesting. I mean, it's, you know, there's a little bit more details and talking about how they've changed their reporting standard and everything and kind of opened up the guidelines on reporting UAPs for pilots. And obviously, if, you know, we said it before, if a Tic Tac type craft or little glowing spheres with cubes inside them that seem kind of magical are doing maneuvers that we can't even understand the physics of, and they're just flying with impunity and in restricted military airspace, that's kind of a security issue. That's something that the Department of Defense should be taking seriously, I would think.
Right. I think that's understated, Grant. I don't think it's kind of a security issue. I think it's a definite security issue. And I think getting to the bottom of it should be the highest priority of the military. And transparency is key to that, to rebuild trust with the public with regards to UAP.
True that. And then I guess that raises a couple of questions. I mean, the first, obviously, it's the military, man, and we're human. So, like, we don't care what your business is. You could come on and then you fly into our restricted airspace and say, "We come in peace." Then we'll be like, "But you go in pieces." And we'll kick those alien cans across the galaxy if we have to, or at least twice as far as the moon. But
yeah, we get one of the Quaids to fly up there and say, "Hey, ET, up yours."
Ain't no phone at home. You just cashed your last quarter.
Yeah.
No call and collect, cowboy. Sorry, I'm just rambling here.
This I don't is even what think I'm entertaining myself. This is what we do here on Our UFO Reel. We riff on pop culture references for a majority of the episode. So,
but no, I think it is interesting, you know, that they're at least. I mean, there's been a lot of news coming out of some official military channels about this "quote unquote" phenomena, you know. So it's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Now, do you think it could just be like an intelligence cover story or something, kind of like a false flag or something to cover up our own technology for other nations, or I don't know what other possibility, or
I don't want to use
nations concerned and, you know, trying, you know what I mean?
I don't want to use the term false flag, but I think maybe a head fake or something like that. That, you know, that's a possibility, that it's some kind of blatant misinformation campaign to say that our truth being that our government already knows what these things are because they produce them. And yeah, that would make sense. But only time will tell as far as that stuff is concerned, I suppose.
Well, it looks like there was by Go, there was, this is Susan Go. It's spelled like cough with a G. So I assume I assume it's not Goff. I think it's Go, but I guess that doesn't matter. But in a follow-up email, she added that, quote, since the majority of recent reporting about UAP observations have come from naval aviators, since approximately 2018, the Department of the Navy has been leading assessments of UAP incursion into Department of Defense training ranges and designated airspace. Over the last year, DOD undertook efforts to formalize the good work of done by the Navy for DOD, she added. Deputy Secretary Norquist approved the establishment of the UAPTF on August 4th, 2020. In the official announcement Friday, Go also explained that, quote, the safety of our personnel and the security of our operations are of paramount concern. The Department of Defense and the military departments take any incursions by unauthorized aircraft into our training ranges or designated airspace very seriously and examine each report, the statement added. This includes examinations of incursions that are initially reported as UAP when the observer cannot immediately identify what he or she is observing, end quote. So
there's a lot of you were shouting at them there. Grant, you were shouting at them.
Yeah, it looks like Go lost her accent there too. But yeah, so basically they're saying, you know, they're doing it for the troops. Support the troops. And yeah, but she makes a good point. Like, if you've got otherworldly or inhuman seeming out of the possibility of the physical reality craft operating like that, I think they do need to do something. But what? But what? I mean, I guess we could hammer that to death. But
and yeah, we have done
that in the past. We've talked about it quite a bit. So what are you supposed to do, huh?
With something that is extremely technologically superior to you, I don't know if there is much you can do. But if we have some sort of secret death rays or some kind of futuristic electromagnetic pulse, like grenades or missiles or something like that, or gravitational, some kind of gravitational weapons, maybe we could stand a chance. But again, yeah, like you said, man, we could speculate forever on this kind of stuff. But I think we're right. Basically, if we are being visited by otherworldly craft, we're definitely at their mercy. Make no mistake about it.
We have to assume if all these stories we've heard dealing with military encounters are true, that's only the tip of the iceberg, and the military must have a lot more data.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
you know, and that's what Lou Elizondo's been saying. So I have nothing intelligent to say about it, basically. yeah, it's a kerfuffle, man. But it's interesting to see this new acceptance by the military of at least admitting there's some kind of phenomena, you know.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And I really do think that's a big step. And well, it's a step.
Because we knew about ATIP, but that was never announced. That was a black ops, you know? So, well, I don't know if it's officially black ops, but it was at least gray. I don't know the terminology, but you know what I mean? It was secret.
It was not transparent ops, all right?
Oh, it wasn't black ops. It was black budget, so.
Okay. No, the Black Ops was from our last episode with Stan Romanek when he got when he Frank Dukes to a whole bunch of Black Ops guys with a bike chain.
Yeah. Black Ops. I had to show them what's what.
Yeah. Yeah. Show them what was up from the mean streets of South Denver. So.
Right.
Yeah.
So, what about this flick here?
Anywho.
Urgent late night text from Tom at about 1 a.m, like, are you up? You've got this.
Yeah, it was okay. So, there is a document.
I imagine our listeners, if you're on Netflix, you might be familiar with this because it probably popped up in your recommends too.
Right. Yeah, this popped up in my recommends. It's a documentary. It's. I implore each and every one of you to watch it. It's fascinating. It's only 16 minutes long. It's called John Was Trying to Contact Aliens. That's the name of the documentary. John Was Trying to Contact Aliens. And I'm just going to give a quick synopsis. There's kind of a big reveal towards the end of it, so I don't want to give too much away for those of you who haven't seen it. But we're going to talk about the alien stuff and John as a person is a fascinating character to me. And I thought it would be nice to just kind of have a discussion about not only this documentary, but about some bigger questions that this documentary raises. As Grant and I have mentioned earlier, we have both been swamped with work, so we haven't had the time to put a whole ton of research into some topics that deserve a lot of research. But this one I thought would fit nicely just because it's a nice compact story where we can kind of use as a jumping off point to discuss some larger issues.
So, yeah, and full, I don't know if we should do this, but like a little peek behind the scenes here, because I did have a little bit of hesitation about doing this episode. It's probably going to be a little more conversation. Tom and I kind of spitballing less than reporting on anything, you know. So if the listener's not into that, then you probably just want to stop now because we're just going to be kind of talking, you know, or I don't mean to put it too bluntly or I don't know. Like, I don't know. I think it is an interesting concept. It's kind of like I don't know. I feel like I need to tell the listener this because last week, you know, we didn't have time basically to record at all, really. Tom got some surprise extra work to do for work, so that kind of cut off the recording and everything. And then I was gonna try and do just a conversational type episode with my buddy, and we went ahead and recorded it. And we did do that, and but then the audio didn't work out right, so I never posted it. But you know, we're always thinking about the listener. I mean, the idea is that we're reporting a either on a movie or some kind of research, basically some concrete research on something that we didn't initially do, basically, right? Or and we just try and kind of give the cliff notes on it, I guess, or an art.
Right.
And then Tom, you had a story here too that you were going to do, but then the video just got taken down, right? So
yeah, there's there's an Yeah,
I guess we shouldn't give too much away because it might be a future episode. I would imagine if it comes back on.
Trust me, okay. It will be a future episode. But there was a little interesting blurb that got taken down. But in my experience, this group that I'm on in Facebook, the moderator or the creator is very good at when things get taken down. He's very good at putting them back up somehow in a more clandestine way. So. Mm-hmm.
I did want to say, so we're kind of, obviously we're trying to work around our social or professional lives, basically our personal lives, and keep the consistency of the show going, but we're still trying to work it out here, folks. So
yeah, thank you for sticking with us here. We're doing our best. We don't make a dime off of this podcast. And so it's something we do for fun in our free time. And our free time has been increasingly less and less these days. So, thank you all so much for sticking with us and being patient. If we don't put out an episode every week, we try to put one out at least every 2 weeks.
Right. Yeah, we might. I mean, worst case, we might start going bi-weekly here. Or I know Tom's going to be taking up the reins on a lot of research. He volunteered to keep the show going. Which I feel horrible because Tom's really overburdened at work too. But I've just had trouble keeping up workload of and doing the research and everything. You know, the way I like
to. Guys, bottom line, we're trying to keep our eyes in the skies here, okay? But our feet are firmly planted on the ground at this time due to finances and work obligations and family obligations. So again, we really do appreciate all of you listening to us and engaging with us on social media and email and everything. We really do appreciate each and every one of you. So
yeah, I just want to be open with the listeners and let them know what's going on, you know.
Sure. A little
peek behind the curtains there, but sorry if that's boring to listen to, but anyway.
Again, there's no sorries on this show, Grant.
No, I got
sorries on this show.
I have to apologize at least 3 times an episode, if not more.
Oh man, we got to work on that, dude. Those are rookie numbers, Grant. You got to bump those way down.
All right, yeah, I'm working on it. All right, I'm sorry about that.
All right, so this is a documentary I saw. It's called it's on Netflix. It's called John Was Trying to Contact Aliens, and it's just a real quick 16-minute documentary. And we're going to give you the Cliff Notes version of this already short Cliff Notes document. This already short documentary. It's about a guy named John Shepard who.
And stop it. If you haven't watched it and you're interested, just stop it now. Watch it first and then listen to us because.
Yeah, that works. It's about a guy named John Shepard who was adopted at a very young age by his grandparents. He grew up in the in a super rural area of northern Michigan. I'm not sure exactly what town it was in northern Michigan, but I've spent quite a bit of time in northern Michigan, in the South Branch area, Tawas. I'm trying to think of some other. I've even been in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan in the Rapid River area. And there's, you know, it's very, very rural. It's beautiful, beautiful country, but it's super rural. And this guy, John Shepard, grew up there with his grandparents because I guess his dad left him when he was really young. And he said he didn't really connect with his mom on a mother and son level. So his grandparents, he said they kind of felt bad for him and adopted him. And this guy,
It was interesting. I don't know if it was just him that said that or if maybe when he was being interviewed, they asked him if his mother was somewhat alien or something. But
he said she was almost like an alien to me.
No, he said it's not quite alien. That's not the right word for it, but just different.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that was like, you know, kind of a Freudian slip type thing or just the way his mind works, you know, or if he was being led in that direction, but go ahead.
I want to get something out of the way about John Shepard. This guy is without a doubt absolutely brilliant.
Seems like a Bob Lazar type or something.
He seems like a Bob Lazar type, but less, I'd say more of an introvert than Bob Lazar. He seems like there's an article I found here that described him. He was nicknamed as a modern day Thomas Edison in terms of his just intelligence wise and in terms of his invention. So in the like.
Well, it's pretty obvious watching the movie.
Right. I guess starting at age around 21 or so, he started building like massive pieces of electronic equipment in his grandparents' tiny little cottage. And he's a self-taught kind of electronics engineer. And he founded this thing called Project STRAT, which stands for Special Telemetry Research and Tracking. And it's basically a gigantic broadcasting terminal, which he would use. He would beam like he's basically like a space DJ. Now, how awesome is that? I think that this took like most of this happened in the 60s when he was doing this, 60s and 70s. He would beam music that he liked out into space, hoping to make contact with aliens. And so I think it was, I don't remember what day it was, but like every Friday at 9 p.m. or something like that, he would beam all sorts of music. And the music he would send up there. I wrote down some of the bands that he would send, which I think would be awesome.
Before we get into this, I do want to – can I just jump in here?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I hate to interrupt. I really want to apologize, but I will resist the urge. I wish – that's kind of one of the things I wish they'd spend a little bit more time just going into the science of what he was doing. That's not really what the focus of the movie was about, I don't think. But
right.
Because – this lab, man, I want to spend a little time going over that. And like,
oh, we will. Yeah, for yeah? sure.
Okay. Maybe I should just wait then to bring it up. But because I was a little confused as to exactly what he was doing. Like, were these radio waves or what was he doing? He was talking about some of the stuff that he had made, like a.
All of it went over. Okay, see, I'm as far as this kind of this level of science and physics and electronic engineering goes, it's way out of my wheelhouse. I don't understand, but I know he threw the terms microwave radiation, or microwaves and radio waves and all sorts of stuff out there. It was a what was it called? It broadcast, like he broadcasted everything from this like.
Yeah, in the beginning, it was like a microwave
right in front of his house
thing or something, right? Or just like a radio tower. But then, well, I don't know if I'm cutting you off now. Maybe I should just follow
you.
The best time to talk about it is. Because I was wondering, like, because I'm not sure how familiar you are with that. But as far as like broadcasting just radio, like there's certain frequencies that are allowed to be broadcast by radio stations, right? Like,
right,
got certain bandwidths, and then the rest of it's pretty much restricted, I believe. I think there's some public radio wave frequencies or whatever, right, for like CB and stuff like that. But like, how would you get the permission to do that? Would people just be able to tune in his broadcasts on their radios? You know,
I kind of, the way I got it, I don't think so. I think he wasn't broadcasting it towards Earth. He right. It looked like he had some kind of like, it looked almost like a telescope that was focused shooting straight out into space. So it's not like right. This was something where he was trying to broadcast to other Earthlings. He was his whole point in doing this was to try and make contact with aliens and show them awesome music that he liked. And he, I was interested about the legalities of it too. Wondering if the FCC ever made contact going like, hey, dude, you can't be doing this kind of stuff. But apparently not. The reason right. he ended up having to shut it down was because it just wasn't financially doable anymore.
But I'm sure he could petition for like a certain spectrum, you know, and be like, this is an experiment I'm doing, and write up, I don't know, however you would do that. And maybe he could get, you know, some research granted or something like that.
Yeah. But, and the thing about him is it just, listening to him speak, he's extremely intelligent. But at the same time, he didn't seem like a rebellious type. He seemed like a very cordial and very accommodating person. So if they yeah. were to say like, hey, you're broadcasting illegally or something, I think he would have figured out a way to comply with whatever was going on. I mean, because again, I cannot stress enough, this guy's intelligence is absolutely off the charts. In terms of everything that he constructed, and it was
I want to talk about that too, because it's like, so there's all these old photos like going back to I guess the 60s and early 70s, right?
Yeah.
Like, when he's a youngster, and like you see his grandparents just sitting there reading the paper or watching television in their living room, and then there's just like, I don't even know how you describe it, just like
wall-to-wall like electronics,
scientists.
Man.
Yeah, like it looks like a sci-fi movie set, or like a research lab,
it reminded me of the original Star Trek series, like the bridge on the original Star Trek series with a bunch of like wavy lines going everywhere, like almost like echocardiograms, or like, you know, like the heartbeat monitors and like weird like stuff you'd find at Spencer's Gifts and everything. Like,
it looked like this guy was trying to like raise Akira again or something.
I mean, this is definitely got the mad scientist vibe, but he's definitely like a benevolent mad scientist. He's not he just really wanted to make contact. I got some quotes from him where he said
I want to talk about that technology though, cuz like I couldn't even imagine what some of that stuff is for, like maybe just to monitor frequencies and like energy modulations or something, but like he's got those little like round screens.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to describe it, like a glowing fluctuating circle kind of spinning around in the middle of a graph. Like,
yeah. And I mean, he said
do they have those at like radio stations or what? Like, it seemed pretty advanced.
I think it was a lot of it was self-built, you know, this guy is just like an electronics wizard.
I wondered about the grandparents' like electricity bill, because these consoles, I mean, man, if this guy had just been into video games or something, I don't know. I'm sure the grandparents thought like, yeah, he's going to get a contract like doing, or I don't know. I don't know if he even did like do anything professionally like that, but,
well, they had to pay the bill somehow, I'm sure. But he built, long story short is he built all this stuff in their cottage, and eventually they were even more accommodating, and he wound up with it's like a two-story, I forget. Let me see. He wound up building a quote two-story deep space transmitter they made an addition onto the cottage so that would like power this gigantic deep space transmitter thing. And his grandparents were just super supportive of this, and that's beautiful to me. They're like, yeah. Hey, this kid has a hobby. We need to nurture it, and we'll do whatever it takes to nurture that. I mean, he's obviously like has a potential to be like a mega prodigy. He didn't strike me as a super social type. I'm sure he's very, he's not an extreme extrovert by any means, but he was easy to understand in terms of just him expressing his emotions and everything. And it was really, I found him to be a very like just a likable dude and very sincere. What you see is what you get. He's one of those guys where like he has kind of a rural appearance. You know, he's got super long hair and like a giant beard and like overalls and everything. And if I looked at him, I wouldn't think electric engineer. But right. At the same time, once he starts speaking, I'm like, wow, this guy is a mad genius. But in a good way. And he, you know, so he decides he wants to, one of the quotes that he says, he said he felt stuck on Earth his whole life, but his mind was traveling the cosmos. His mind was always traveling the cosmos. Mm-hmm. So he felt like he didn't fit in this rural community in Michigan, very conservative area. And he just didn't feel like he fit in, and I'm sure he felt abandoned by his biological parents, and so he was always just dreaming of contacting aliens. And so he started doing took it upon himself to be a space DJ, and he would broadcast music from like Kraftwerk, Tangerine Dream, Harmonia, Can, Robert Fripp, Brian Eno, a bunch of different artists, African artists, East Indian artists, reggae, Afrobeat, gamelan music, which I believe is like Indonesian music.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's just a really, really cool guy who would he did this for 25, I think he said 25 to 30 years. And he said it gave my life meaning to do this.
Right.
It's something that he did. He said he quote never gave up trying to make contact.
Well, for such a smart guy though, I wanted to learn more about that, because it seems like kind of a hopeless task. Because even in the beginning, right before he built that, they built that separate unit off the side of the house, which basically was a huge lab for him, and I think really expanded the technology that he was using. But before that, he just had an antenna, and he said that it broadcast about twice as far as the moon. So these would have to be some aliens that were pretty close to us.
Sure, sure.
And then is he just doing it to like one focus point, or is it, you know what I mean? Like what?
That's a good question. I think he would do it. They didn't get into the specifics of that too much because they were more focused on his personal life, which I don't want to give away because it's a pretty big reveal. And I found it to be quite heartwarming. But yeah, I mean, this whole project of his, he had, given his intelligence, he had to have known it was extremely unlikely that he would ever make contact. He had to know that it was literally a shot in the dark, like the vast darkness of the almost infinite space, that he would ever reach any, that his music would ever reach any ears that could listen to it. But he did it anyway for 25 or 30 years. And that to me is like, that's the definition of passion and a hobby and a labor of love. And that is, man, that just really moved me. It was like, I don't know if it was like, cause I was watching it late at night and I was exhausted, but it was just like really profound to me. And I thought it was, I thought it was super moving to see someone who is so, so driven and I guess obsessed with that.
Well, that's why I think it's not strange that he focused more on like the actual method that he was doing, you know? But I guess that's kind of the interesting thing about it is like, I don't know if this is too big of a spoiler because he never really makes concrete contact or anything like that.
He does not.
And he kind of just laughs it off like, oh, no, I never really, as far as ufology goes, I never really made any discoveries or anything that's really concrete evidence or anything like that or would be interesting.
But
it seems like it was more, and he kind of says like, for me, the thrill was always there just because of the possibility of making contact.
Right. And he's filled with hope. He knows the odds are infinitesimal that he's ever going to make that contact. But what if he does, you know? I mean, that would be something that would change everything about Earth, you know, about us as humans. And I think –
I got a picture. There's got to be like some, at least a few incidents where military, either from the U.S. or from other countries, like once they get satellites up and they're looking for any kind of frequencies or high energy output or anything, or like what's going on in the U.S. over
in
there?
In northern Michigan, like rural northern
like, what
Michigan.
Is this strange thing? Is this some massive, kind of weapon? Or?
Yeah, this massive power surge.
Right.
Because looking at it, it looks like something out of a Frankenstein movie. Like it's two stories high, this this power transmitter, radio transmitter, or whatever it is. But I just thought it was cool that not only was he trying to contact them, but he was trying to reach them through music, and that's super neat to me that he was doing that.
Well, he thinks of it as he describes it as the universal language almost, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not like he could have just been sending like, you know, repeating blips or something that would indicate. But no, he'd speak and say, hey, all you cosmic listeners, this is
if you're out there listening.
Yeah. This is the new one from Harmonia. It's a really groovy song here. Hope you like it. And I just thought that was really, really charming. And like, I found it very endearing that they're, as far as obsessive hobbies go, I think that's almost like a noble thing to do, you know, to just try and reach out with love. Cause you could tell he was reaching out with love too. It wasn't like, I don't know how to describe it really. But he was reaching out with a sincere hope of connecting, hoping that aliens would connect and go, oh man, that Kraftwerk song you just played, that was the shit. My bad. But yeah, this John Shepherd guy was just fascinating to me. So there's like I said, there's a big reveal, and the reveal, I mean, the reveal on talk, I'm not talking about the fact that he doesn't, you know, reach aliens or anything like that. There's another thing that is pretty dang moving as well. But I don't want to give it away. For anyone who hasn't seen it. So unless you want to give it away, Grant, what do you think?
No. I say don't give it away. Don't give it away. Don't give it away now.
Don't give it away now. Okay.
Yeah. It's not very alien-y, so it's.
Yeah. I can't tell if I'm a kingpin or a pauper. So Anyway, that was Red Hot Chili. That's the just okay.
I don't know anything else that they say in that song.
Okay. But
give
it did.
Away, give it away, give it away now. Anyway, sorry. Keep it on the book.
I think that's the part where he says, I can't tell if I'm a kingpin or a pauper.
Is that what he said? Okay.
Yeah.
I never picked up on that part. I can't tell if I'm a kingpin or a pauper.
Yeah.
Cool.
Far out, man. So, I mean, I thought this was very... I was, like I said, I was moved. It was only 16 minutes long. I didn't know what to expect with it. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. It made me want to learn a lot more about it. But at the same time, like, he seems like a pretty private dude. So I don't think he would necessarily, like, as far as the documentary goes, I don't think they would have necessarily, or he would have necessarily wanted them doing a deep dive into his personal life about, like, what happened with his parents and everything. Right.
It was a really is an interesting movie, like a 15-minute documentary on Netflix. Have you ever seen anything like that before?
No, I haven't.
Standalone.
No.
It was a good movie. It's kind of the kind of documentaries we talked about this before that I like, where it's just like some interesting person doing an interesting thing, like some outlier, you know, that you would not really hear about otherwise.
Right. And he's not. And as far as outliers go, there's a lot of really dangerous outliers in society these days, and this guy is not one of them.
Right.
You could tell he's I don't know if I'd call him a hippie or what, but I think he's just seems like a
he's a cat at least.
Yeah, he's a kind-hearted soul with awesome taste in music. So
I gotta listen to Massive Attack, man. I've heard so many people love that music, and I'm not really familiar with it.
Oh, you do gotta check out Massive Attack, man. Their Mezzanine album is super good, and Protection. And
oh, wait.
I can give
it a whole bunch. I think I'm mixing. I always mix up Massive Attack and Kraftwerk, though. But
yeah, you do need to listen to Kraftwerk, too. Computer Love, and Computer Love is one of my favorite albums of all time. It's so good if you're into electronic music like that. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I wanted to say about him before we just kind of start discussing some of the greater implications of this. No, I think we covered pretty much anything, or covered pretty much everything. It is, like I said, it's a super short documentary. But I think one of the bigger questions that this movie poses without directly asking it is, who speaks for Earth? You know, does NASA speak for Earth? Does SETI speak for Earth? Does the United States speak for Earth? Does China speak for, like, what country speaks for Earth? And is it any individual's right to go ahead and broadcast out into space? I mean, given the chances are super small that there were any aliens listening to you know, Kraftwerk or Robert Fripp and Brian Eno or any of the Afro pop or reggae stuff he's playing. But I wonder, like, what do you think, Grant? Are you okay with that? With people just going out and sending stuff to potentially alien cultures?
Well, don't the Nazis essentially speak for Earth? Because wasn't that the first thing that was broadcast, was the Nazi Olympic Games?
Was it?
I'm kind of getting that from
That was in Contact, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there is some scientific basis to that, but that was just TV signals. Probably there's probably radio waves going out before.
Yeah, that. Yeah. But this is I don't think the Nazi Olympics was deliberately sent into Earth. I think it was just space interference or space. I'm trying to find the right word.
Well, it's just, I mean, all radio waves, they just keep emanating out indefinitely. You know, they're going to get weaker and weaker and more dispersed. But
right. But what Mr. Shepard, John Shepard, was doing here was a deliberate attempt to do that.
Oh, I see what you mean. OK.
And to make contact. And are you cool with that, or are you not cool with that?
I still got to go with the Nazis, man.
What do you mean?
I'm just babbling. Yeah, I'm cool with it.
Yeah, you're cool with people just going ahead and...
Oh, well...
going ahead.
I don't know, because then, I mean, maybe if the aliens are online, I mean, for all we know, they could just be watching Ben Shapiro clips or something, you know?
Oh, God, I hope not.
Or maybe they've been tuned into what's his face, you know, and they're worried about turning the frogs gay or something.
Alex Jones.
Yeah, yeah, or David Icke, you know.
Yeah, I
don't know who does have the authority. The president of the United States, I guess. I think he's a pretty good representative.
I mean,
he's elected by a majority of Americans, but then
but what about people in England and what about people in Germany? We have plenty of listeners in England and Germany and Australia who I think would probably be like, we don't want the president of the United States to have the authority to broadcast deliberate transmissions.
Do you think it should be like economy based, like the G20, like the leaders of all the G20 nations or something? Like,
I don't know, man. I think it would be cool if there was some, I mean, once everything gets back on track, as far as when coronavirus gets over and when we become a more enlightened society, a more global society, when countries actually like try and, you know, work together to accomplish common goals, I think it would be cool if there were elected.
Sounds like a pipe dream already.
Oh, it is. It's we must not be afraid to have pipe dreams. But if we get to that point, I think it would be cool if there was some kind of elected task force to like determine what would be the best stuff to broadcast. I know that, you know, on the Voyager, I think it was on Voyager, there's that golden record that has like, I think some Mozart and some Beethoven, and it's got some poetry on there. But I think NASA just sent that because they were the only ones who had the capability to do that at the time.
Right.
So.
And I think I want to say, or I imagine they kind of worked with other nations to get cultural references and stuff, but maybe not. Maybe it was just a few scientists that were like, hey, let's do this.
Voyager. Yeah, that was
Do you think Elon Musk has the right to speak for Earth? I mean, he's got the money, so he's won the game, and he's making his own private space program. Why not?
Well, that's the thing.
I guess the people holding the nuclear weapons have the right to speak for Earth, because if we try and argue, they could just wipe us all out.
I guess I'm talking about who should, and I'm not talking about who actually does have the right. Who should have the right?
Well. Should doesn't matter.
I think it does, man.
yeah, but I guess the point I'm trying to make is, yeah, it's all relative, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody can speak for everybody, can they? Mm. I mean, which chimpanzee should speak for the chimpanzee race?
The elected chimpanzee race. Okay. The elected chimpanzee. I think that's maybe a bit different.
Which chimpanzee could speak for the entire Earth and every species on Earth?
Which chimpanzee?
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Okay. Sorry if I'm losing you here.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, what I'm saying is a human is a human, much as a chimpanzee is a chimpanzee to me.
Sure. But at the same time, there's no disputing that we are the only species at this time that's capable of sending transmissions to space. So, all right, I'll take this a step further. Should anybody be sending transmissions into space to try and contact aliens?
Probably not, right?
I don't know, man. I guess it depends on your outlook on life. Like if you're, if you're more optimistic and you think that there are possibly altruistic aliens out there who are just, you know, of the Star Trek variety, who are interested in just attaining knowledge, or if they're like the Borg variety who just want to come in and absorb and,
Was it Stephen Hawking that said that it's a bad idea to try and make contact with a more advanced race? It kind of going off the that's like the Mayans or the Incans trying to send message in a bottle out to Europe to to come visit or something, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So I think what Mr. John Shepherd was doing is, I think, maybe kind of
being irresponsible.
I guess it could be construed that way. I think
he just took it upon himself, basically. And it's like, some people don't like electronic music or jazz music, you know.
I mean, I do. So, you know, like, I think it's an awesome selection to play, but because it encounters like a vast swath of music at the time from all over the world. So right. I think that was, as far as like, if you're going to send musical transmissions, deliberate musical transmissions to aliens, I guess that seems like a pretty decent one to do, like to send from a ton of different countries and cultures as a cross section of Earth in the 1970s. I think that's all right. But I think the bigger question is, should we be actively trying to send transmissions? And I don't know, man, that could go either way for us.
Yeah. Well, I think sending transmissions is interesting anyway, because then I guess you have to send some kind of key on how to decode the transmissions, because transmissions are just data, really, right? Even radio waves, like, you have to know. I mean, I'm not 100% sure how radio works, but you basically have to transcribe the pattern that's being sent to turn it into noise or whatever, you know?
Right.
So I think that's interesting. Like, we would assume that an advanced civilization would realize that these frequencies are some kind of attempt to communicate, right?
Yeah. And I guess we also have to come to a conclusion as to whether there's a natural progression or almost a guaranteed technological progression. Like, you go from a wheel to X, and then you go from X to Y, and then you go from Y to Z, and then you get to radio waves. I don't know if there is a natural established progression for civilizations, but if there is, then it seems reasonable that they would be able to decode radio waves.
Right. I believe on the it was a golden record on the Voyager, which is funny, like, picturing some advanced civilization, like, trying to figure out how to build a record player.
Throwing down a turntable.
Yeah. I believe they that'd be cool. Especially if they had like four arms and they're just scratching it up.
Oh my god, DJ Kubert gets in there and does some wave twister action on there.
Red alert.
I am the red worm.
But I believe on the Voyager, to be a little more serious, it did come with a key, basically, or a way to translate it. Assuming that, you know, an advanced civilization is going to understand how atoms work and kind of representing a hydrogen particle and then
how
to decode that. I don't know. It's probably a little too advanced for me to figure out, but,
sure.
And then that showed how information was encoded on the disk, I believe, but some smart people coming up with that stuff. I would have no idea do that, you know. And I looked at their key, and it was a little confusing for me, but I'm not the smartest guy in the world.
I don't think there are very many people who can claim to be amongst the smartest people in the world, but
I guess the movie that we're talking about, that we're discussing, John tried to speak to aliens. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it was called John was trying to contact aliens.
It wasn't really about the details of his plan, I guess. More the idea, like you said, or the overall theme. But I would have liked if they spent another 30 to 45 minutes just going into all the technical details.
All the specs, yeah.
What he was trying to attempt.
You know what? I'll bet that's out there somewhere. I didn't research all the specs that it took, because, frankly, that's just above my intelligence level to understand that kind of stuff. But I'll bet it's out there if you look hard enough. Or if
it just went more into his reasoning about what music he was playing, but I think he was just playing music that he liked, I guess.
And
it was more instrumental and stuff that he would think would be more universal, I would imagine, but
yeah, there's that. And he said, I think at one point it was just looking at it. I mean, it's from geographically all over planet Earth. That in itself is way cool to me. It's not like he was just trying to be like, I don't know, rock and roll centric or hip hop centric or anything. I mean, hip hop wasn't even around when he was broadcasting this stuff, I don't think. Well, I mean, if he was doing it for 25 or 30 years, maybe it would, maybe he eventually, like reached out into hip hop territory and all that kind of stuff. But
I would imagine so.
That would be really neat to try and find like a playlist of his that he put together throughout the years. So,
yeah. Were you familiar with all the bands that he was talking about?
A lot of them I was, but
like
not
electronic ones. And stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. Like Kraftwerk and Tangerine Dream is awesome too, man. And Can and Robert Fripp was from King Crimson. King Crimson rules. And Brian Eno, obviously, of Roxy Music. And he had a whole bunch of solo stuff, too. And just a genius guy.
Was Brian Eno, was he involved in Love is the Drug? Or
I think so. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty groovy, man, if he's playing that for aliens.
Yeah. That was, that's a Roxy Music song.
Right.
Yeah.
What was that other band?
I don't want to get that wrong.
I thought it was Roxy Music.
That was Brian Ferry. I'm sorry. I was getting confused with Brian Eno, but, Brian Eno has done all sorts of stuff, man.
I've read his name a lot. I'm not too familiar with his work, but sometimes I don't go for that more experimental stuff. I probably like it more now than I would have when I was young and looking into it, because for some reason, Eno's name was associated with Trent Reznor and Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, I think he did some, he might have produced some of this stuff, but yeah, I mean, he was on, he was in Roxy Music for a while. But I don't think he specifically wrote Love is the Drug.
Sorry, this is going to be pretty obscure if you don't like Nine Inch Nails, but he did that little guitar part, right? It's like, hey, pig.
He did? That was Brian Eno that did that?
I think so. I think he did the outro on that song, or he contributed directly to one of those songs. I think that was like his noise jam or something.
He also, Brian Eno, if I'm not mistaken, he did the intro to the Windows 95, like the boom, bring, ding, 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 you know, like that, the Windows 95 startup thing, the startup theme. And if you slow it down, it's actually like super beautiful. But anywho, let's not get on a maybe we should get on a super long Brian Eno kick. But
I was asking what the name of that other band. I think it starts with an A, because they mentioned it a couple times.
Harmonia.
That's what I was thinking of.
Harmonia is awesome too, man. They're all over Spotify, so at the very least, I'm going to try and check out John Shepherd's Spotify playlist, if there is one, or just a playlist in general. So anyway, I guess before we get too rambly with the music geekery.
That was kind of our idea on this one, by the way, but Tom had a challenge for me. But what'd you want to say?
Well, I was going to say, what albums would you send into space? But I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't even answer that. I don't know, man. Like,
I want to hear yours, because it was too hard of a, going back to your question, who speaks for man? It's like, I don't know how to choose.
Yeah.
To represent humanity, you know?
Exactly. And the more I think about it, the more I'm like, dude, I know what I like, but what I like is irrelevant to like the 4 billion world. People on Earth, and however many there are now. So
put the Stones, the Beatles, Queen, Abbott,
gotta put some AC/DC on there. Not really. I mean, we don't have to put AC/DC on there, or even the Beatles or the Stones, or I don't know, man. So I don't know. I could come up with a list of my personal top fivers, but I don't
Yeah, ultimately, like, I'm just going to put my favorite bands on there and then, like, throw in some classical and call it a day. Really.
Yeah, for all I know, if I just put the Jesus Lizard's Goat album on there, it might just piss off the aliens, and I don't want that to happen.
So. Yeah, they're like, this is unlistenable. It's unmelodic. Pretty good rhythm, but the lyrics are just, sounds like a drunk guy yelling into a microphone. Like, let's turn around. Stay away from that place. This is like a shotgun blast to the face after I knock on the door.
But yeah, I do have to give mad props to John Shepherd, because that does seem like a very thoughtful playlist that he put together.
What playlist did you come up with, though? You had to have some ideas, right? Like, I was thinking, you know, I guess it's just kind of cheesy, and I don't know if this is interesting to people, but I was thinking, like, classical, you got to... Personally, yeah. For me, like, you know, I got to put some Beethoven on there. I'm not sure exactly what piece. Maybe the 9th is the classic one. I really like, I believe it's the 5th piano concerto from Beethoven. I think that covers a lot of good ground, but I don't want him to get too bored, because I tend to get bored in the first movement on there. I don't want the aliens just like after 10 minutes being like,
I'd put in some Eric Satie's Gymnopédies. Those are some beautiful, beautiful ones as far as classical goes. It's just absolutely.
I don't even think I know that one.
Yeah, I didn't do the best job of singing it, but it's gorgeous.
Or maybe some like Bach or.
Pachelbel's
yeah,
canon.
I was gonna say, I think Canon and D is almost like a perfect song for me. So, like, you know, as cheesy as it's considered, but it's like, I think it's pretty perfect. So, I'd probably have to put that one in there. And then the wedding, the aliens are gonna think that they're coming to a wedding or something, I guess. But
right. But if you think about it, all that stuff is super Eurocentric in terms of.
Right.
Music, and it's beautiful in its own right, but I guess that doesn't really represent a lot of Earth. So I don't know, man.
Well, that's where I'm not.
I think it would be cool.
I can't like represent Eastern countries very well.
Yeah,
I don't know about their musical culture that well.
But it seems like John Shepherd did a very sweet good faith attempt to do that, so I thought that was way cool.
Right. I guess it seems so like 70s sci-fi though to do like electronica to aliens.
Well, at the time that was super cutting edge, you know.
Right.
at the time Kraftwerk, like that kind of electronic music had not been done before.
And it is kind of interesting because the way those synthesizers work, they're really like, I mean, they mess with the electronic, like, sound wave, basically, you know.
Right.
So it is kind of mathematical in a sense, I guess. I don't know. What's the difference between a computer producing a frequency and then kind of altering that in certain ways? Like, I don't know. I'm thinking of, like, sine waves or, like square wave, you know, like video games were square waves. That's why they sound so harsh, you know.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Like MIDI stuff. Is that what?
Yeah, because it's like instead of curving up into the note or whatever, it's just like straight up and then straight. You know, so like, you know, like that. That would just be like a square wave as a side, like where like instruments have an attack and stuff. You know, or even voices.
Wow, you look like you were ready to attack me when you were doing that, man.
me.
Maybe we should just send him when I did Alice in Chains' Nutshell. Are you there?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Nutshell? Yeah.
Wait, was it Nutshell that we did? Or?
See, that's where it gets rough because that's true, yeah. I don't know. It is hard. I mean, what does represent humanity? I was afraid it would just turn into us talking about, because you were talking about movies and stuff too, but it's just going to be us talking about our favorite stuff basically and what we're familiar with. So.
I guess if anyone's actually interested in our top five music, our top five songs, go ahead and email us at our UFO Real Podcast.
I mean, what do you put? Like Michael Jackson and the Backstreet Boys on there, or because a bunch of kids like made them the best selling? Or like,
right? And do you put it to a vote? Do you put it to a vote in America? I don't want to put anything to a vote in America right now. Like, what song? What American song would you, you know? Would you send?
Oh,
like,
it's I'm an American band. That, or like Born in the USA, or
God, I don't know, man. I shudder to think.
What's that one?
Or we could blast some Shudder to Think up there. You ever listen to Shudder to Think?
I was thinking that like some Korn or something, or like Disturbed, you know, just to let them know.
Just to let them know there's a lot of irritating stuff.
Or like,
we come from a very annoying planet.
Do you put like West Coast hip hop or East Coast hip hop, or do you put both? You know,
dude, you throw some Nas Biggie and you throw some, yeah, you throw some Nas and Biggie, and you throw some Pac and Snoop.
Yeah,
you mix it up, and then you throw some, you throw some Screwed and Chopped stuff from Houston. You got some DJ Screw and Paul Wall, baby. It is me.
I'm gonna send a song out to these aliens here, see what they do.
Yeah. Shout out to Paul Wall if you're listening out there in H Town, by the way.
I don't know. Did you come up with any universal things that you would think? Because I guess what I settle on is the cliches, but that's just influenced by the movies I watch and stuff. You know?
Yeah.
It's hard. You got to put some Beatles in there. I think that was a big cultural thing. But then I don't know. What are you trying to? Yeah, it's kind of an impossible task. I would just end up trying to send what I think are semi-intellectual songs that I like, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, or AB. I mean, what's wrong with sending children's nursery rhymes, too? Because, you know, Wheels on the Bus, like, that's...
Oh, you're cutting out there, man.
Are you there? Okay. I was going to say, what about child's nursery rhymes, like Wheels on the Bus, or like, you know, Twinkle, Twinkle, right. Little Star? Those are universal. Maybe you have to set up different stations.
Yeah, it's hard to summarize the earth in 10 songs or 5 songs even. Yeah. Did you come up with a list though? I'd like to hear what you said so I can
No,
tell you
I haven't, man. I haven't. I tried and I just kind of threw my hands up at it as a futile task. So
I would do Beastie Boys, Beastie Boys, Beastie Boys.
Dylon.
Sublime and...
Nirvana.
Maybe.
Gotta put something
on there. Yeah, I don't know. It's just... It's kind of silly to think about. I mean, first I need to know my audience. Like, I can't picture... Like, if you're putting Brainiac out there and then... I mean, most people I know would just be confused and bewildered if I played them Brainiac, but even though
or angered. Yeah, yeah, I know you'd want to put some Meat Puppets on there too. And I mean, Jesus, yeah. For the uninitiated, I'd throw some Ween on there, and Ween would just, I mean, Ween elicits a very visceral reaction from my daughter and significant other. So I don't know if that's really the best thing to be sending to aliens.
They don't like annoying music. What about like They Might Be Giants or something? And then you could teach them about the alphabet and stuff at the same time, and like all the
songs. Maybe the, you know? Yeah, the alphabet song or the birthday song, or I don't know.
Loop-de-loop.
Yeah.
It's a tough one, but let us know, guys, if you think there's any music out there that represents humanity. I guess We Are the World.
Yeah, we are the world. We are the children. Yeah, USA for Africa.
Right. I'd probably have to put like, oh man, there's too many good songs. Got to put Green Onions on there, you know, or got to give them some funk.
Oh, if
they don't understand
God.
Funk. They might as well just turn their ship around, man. There's no reason.
You got to put on some Maggot.
Maggot Brain.
Yeah.
Sorry, you're cutting. Yeah, Maggot Brain.
Yeah.
I don't know when it cuts out like that, if it's just for me or if the listener can just hear you. So I sound like a crazy person when I'm reacting, but
Well, my computer battery is running super low right now for some reason. That's not good.
No.
Great.
Well,
I guess maybe we should wrap this up.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I feel like we failed, though.
I don't feel like it. I feel like we, you know, my goal with this episode is to get people to watch this documentary because I thought it was fascinating and it raised some interesting questions. And I think we, I mean, there's no way we could answer those questions, but I think we kind of, I don't know, brought awareness to them. So
do you, did you think of any movies that you think is pretty universal? The only thing I can come up with really is like The Seventh Seal, probably, or Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, maybe.
I would do Weekend at Bernie's. That's the only yeah. one that. That's the only that one. Really that truly, I think. I think Weekend at Bernie's is the only one that truly speaks for everybody on this planet.
Like Ghostbusters or something, maybe.
I think Commando. The Schwarzenegger movie where he is sent back to where his daughter gets kidnapped and he has to go like massacre a whole bunch of people with like claymores and grenades and automatic weapons. I think that speaks for the world pretty well too.
What about like that first Spike Lee joint? What was that movie called?
Do the Right Thing.
Do the Right Thing. Yeah. That would probably confuse the heck out of them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cultural stuff that they might not be able to pick up on and like,
and I think we should send him the BBC version of The Office just to see if Ricky Gervais either cracks them up or annoys the hell out of them.
You could do like that might confuse them too. You send the American and the British version.
Wah. Yeah, there's Ali G too.
Send them Lost and they're like.
Like, these really? People have no idea how to do story arcs.
Or anyway, yeah, okay. I don't know. I don't know if there is a satisfactory answer. That's why you got to do it every night, man, and just hit them with all types of different flavors. You know.
Yeah. Maybe Dog Day Afternoon. Magnolia by P.T. Anderson.
Yeah, or maybe like I don't know. I see. Then it just comes back to what I like. I'm like, you got to put a Kubrick movie in there because that's one of the highest.
Yeah, and then I start.
Aliens might just get bored though. I don't know.
Yeah, I personally love The Big Lebowski, but you have to know so much about American, specifically Southern California culture to find The Big Lebowski funny. So
yeah, or like you know, Star Wars, but then it's
yeah,
like,
but then what if they take that as an invitation to attack us and go like, what are these people trying to say?
Right. Or if like if the aliens all look like Darth Vader or something and they're offended, or if maybe
what if they're all Sarlaccs?
Unless the aliens are children when they see it, then they might it might not resonate with them as much, you know? They'll just think it's kind of boring and childish.
Well, if they are children and it does resonate with them and then they come here and they see how our entire planet has been, like, inundated with Star Wars culture, they might be super stoked on it.
Right. What if they decide to destroy the world because they don't like the prequels or the...
That's a risk I'm not willing to take, man. So therefore, Star Wars is out of the question now.
I was thinking like The Fifth Element would be a good one. Sorry, I'm just like, I think I'm just trying to entertain you now. But The Fifth Element might be a good one because that has like a sequence where she learns about all of human history and human nature.
And then she starts crying, right?
Get caught up. Yeah. It'd be like, big boom. Big bada boom. I forget what she says. Anyway, it doesn't matter. War.
What's it good for?
All right. I'll let Tom and the listeners go, I guess.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, my battery is going kaput.
So. Okay.
Anyway, hope you guys enjoyed this. I had fun. Again, we'll try and do this as often as we can, given our increased work schedules here. But We hope all of you are staying safe in your respective countries and communities. We love you very much, and we appreciate your listening to us. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
And I want to acknowledge that I've had some interesting stuff sent to me recently, or sent to us, but basically it comes to me. So, yeah, and that I want to get into, but I want to do a little more background on. And there's a story that I've had here for a long time that I want to do an episode on, but it's going to take a little while to get it out here with the way we're moving. But it's coming, guys, so hold on.
All right.
All right. Anyway, I love you all. Love you all, and
love you all, too.
And take care out there.
All right.
Bye. Bye.